Hey, everybody. Welcome to today's edition of Locked On Lakers. Brian Kamenetsky and Andy Kamenetsky. Very excited, Andy, to be starting our run here on the show. It's ours now. And for people who don't know us, and not everybody does. I mean, a lot of people, hopefully even you follow us on Twitter at Cam Brothers. Andy and I have covered the Lakers since when, Andy?
We began with Phil Jackson's second season, his first season back, which a lot of people recall as the Kwame Smush years. That was our first year formally covering the team. That was 2005, 2006. And ever since then, we have been covering the team in some capacity, whether written, whether radio, whether podcasting, for outlets like ESPN LA, for The Athletic, for ESPN 710, just basically Spectrum Sportsnet, where we do regular TV appearances. We've been all over the Lakers for about 15 years.
So we're really excited to be connecting with the audience of Locked On Lakers. You can reach out to us at Cam Brothers. Certainly keep leaving all of your comments and everything on the show page, whether it's iTunes on Apple, whatever it is, or the Locked On Lakers Twitter handle, all that stuff. Really excited to get to know this audience. Hopefully, you're coming with us and know us as well. Plenty of stuff to cover today. Anthony Davis, we'll talk about him. He's got two games now under his belt. Both have been underwhelming statistically, Andy, but we'll break down what we've seen. We'll get into some really important developments potentially with the Lakers center rotation. Montrezl Harrell did not play at all on Saturday, and wondering if that's a sign of what's to come. What might that mean for the playoffs? And we'll wrap things up today. Jeannie Buss gave her list of the five most important Lakers of all time. We have a list of our own, Andy. We each have our own lists, but with a little bit of a twist.
Yeah, Jeannie's list, by the way, very controversial, upset a lot of people on Lakers Twitter and the fan base in general. Jeannie rarely steps in it, but in this particular case, she did. We, however, are going to take a brand new look at this whole thing.
I do want to let you know that today's show brought to you by Rock Auto. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. Visit rockauto.com and tell them that Locked On sent you. All right. So Andy, Anthony Davis is back. Played 17 minutes on Thursday. We talked about that on the show last week. Played 28 minutes on Saturday. You put it all together, neither of the games were particularly impressive from a statistical standpoint. 7 of 29 overall. He had 4 rebounds in the game on Thursday. He had 3 in the game on Saturday. A handful of assists when you put them all together. How much better do you think he was? The line was ugly on Saturday, but how much better do you think he was, if at all, Saturday versus Thursday?
I actually thought offensively he looked a lot more fluid. Even though, like you said, his stat line was ugly, he was 5 of 19 from the field for 17 points. He didn't shoot well, but as he noted himself, the shots were often short, which is indicative of legs, which is totally to be expected given what he's going through right now. He didn't seem worried, neither am I. But in the meantime, though, I thought he looked a lot more in the flow of the actual offense itself. He had some really good give and go sequences with Schroeder. I thought he screened really well to free up guards. He had a really nice jump hook against Maxi Kleber. And I also thought, Brian, that he and Andre Drummond looked way more comfortable together. Like, they just seemed to have a better idea of how to actually complement.
They didn't bump into each other. Like, as much. Literally.
Just about to say that. Just staying out of each other's way, like, in terms of what might not be elegant, the things that people were worried about. It's going to take a few more games, before they really start looking cohesive together. But I actually think the possibilities with Drummond and Davis are pretty strong. And at minimum, you already see that Davis being out there, that frees up Andre Drummond a lot on the glass. There's only so much you can crowd down low against him. Wait, teams have been doing that before Davis is back. That's going to make Drummond a more effective player beyond just whatever Davis brings himself.
Yeah, I think people have to remember it is not a natural fit. Like, Andre Drummond doesn't stretch the floor to open up space for Davis, but that it's not like the center rotation they had last year did that either. JaVale McGee does kind of think of himself as a three-point shooter, and he's not terrible at it. You sit there and watch him do it.
Comes from a long line of Lakers centers like Andrew Bynum, who expanded their game.
That's right. So like there is a template for this, and you don't have to go back very far. You just have to go back to last season. And, you know, as a passer and as an offensive threat, you know, Drummond isn't the above the rim kind of guy that the other ones are. He's not a vertical threat.
Not at all.
But
he may be the tallest non-vertical threat I've ever seen in the
NBA. Well, he's the tallest non-vertical threat except for the backup center, who we'll talk about. Like the only Andre Drummond is a leaper compared to Marc Gasol.
That is true.
Right. Fair point. Together, like it is the exact opposite of last year. And I think again, aesthetic. So much of the criticism and the angst that a lot of Lakers fans have is just the aesthetics of it, and it is wildly different. I get all that, and that doesn't change with Drummond. I agree with you. I do have some concern about the ramp up, and the reason I have it is because he really wasn't. He being Davis wasn't playing great. When he got hurt, he was sort of slowly working his way towards something. But like, if you go back to the beginning of the season, I think, you know, part of the reason the Lakers have been able to maintain such a great defensive stance here while Davis and LeBron have been out is partially because Davis wasn't anchoring them the way that he was in the playoffs last year. He wasn't nearly as impactful as he had been, and kind of working his way toward that. I just wonder how much time he needs. You know, he doesn't seem like the kind of guy. LeBron comes back, I think he's gonna be LeBron. Davis feels like a guy who needs to kind of get the engine going a little bit, take a couple practice laps, and then the car drives as fast as you need it.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's hard to say because last year he came out of the gate looking so good with LeBron right away. And it's interesting when you mentioned too, like the defensive side of Anthony Davis and what we didn't see at the beginning of this season. Defensively, to me, is where Davis really looks most out of sync right now.
Correct. I agree.
There was a sequence early in Saturday's loss to Dallas where Dwight Powell was at the top of the arc. He blew past Andre Drummond, you know, who's out in space where it's, I think he's better than I thought he would be, but it's still not his strong point. He blows past getting to the rim, and Davis made no real effort to slide over, and it was this easy dunk. And that to me felt like a microcosm of where Davis is right now. Like one-on-one, I thought he looked more like himself. Just he's so long and quick that even if he's a step slow by his standards, he's just a lot to deal with if you've got the ball squaring up against him. But whenever he needed to rotate to react to things happening off ball, it just felt like he was getting his feet and instincts back. Like it says something that Andre Drummond, in my opinion, was way more effective defensively in Saturday's loss mm-hmm. than AD was. And it's not going to stay that way, but it speaks to where they are right now.
Yeah. And Pete Zayas, you know, friend of the Locked On show, he had a great thread where he kind of broke down what the Lakers were doing on their pick and roll defense Saturday against the Mavericks. And a lot of that was sort of the slow rotations. And it's not every play. I mean, there are some moments where you're like, I remember that guy when you're talking about Davis. But yeah, it was a step slow. He was, you know, the rotations were not super crisp and all that. But that's just that to me is what it was at the beginning of the year too. I didn't notice something appreciably different in these games than I did from what was there earlier in the season. And I think that'll come around. A lot of that is effort. A lot, you know, I think he's still probably measuring himself. Davis is a little bit, which is to be expected. The guy missed a lot of time. By the way, how much did you freak out when I think it turned out he just got kicked in the leg or kneed in the leg or something like that, but he hits the ground. This is in the second half of the game on Saturday. Grabs the leg, and it was, I don't even remember, which leg did he hurt?
It was the opposite leg.
It was the opposite one. Okay.
To answer your question, I was freaking the bleep out.
Right.
Until I recognized what leg it was. And then I was like, okay. All right. Let's settle down and then let's watch the replay. And you could see that he got kicked. And then from there, I wasn't upset until I recognized in the replay, which leg it was.
Right.
freaking the hell out.
Right, because he grabs it and he's like, but I'm like, why isn't anybody calling timeout to get this guy off the floor? Like, and you know, so I mean, he was fine. But it gets back to what I was saying last week, Andy. It is the most uncomfortable experience to watch Davis now play. Like, it was always a little bit, you know, because he's always, we've talked about this, he spends way too much time on the floor. It's nerve-wracking. He falls down all the time. And there's always in the back of your mind this looming threat of an Anthony Davis injury. But now it's even worse. So I just find the entire thing to be entirely uncomfortable. I don't like it. All right. So the Lakers are in Orlando Monday. We'll see how it goes from there, and expecting Davis to start ramping things up. Up next, though, we'll talk a little bit more about the center rotation. Mentioned it on Saturday. Montrezl Harrell did not play at all. And this is off 17 minutes on Thursday and only 13 in the second game against Utah last week. So we'll talk about what that means coming up next.
So you're the hiring expert of your company. What you really need is to help make your short list of quality candidates. You need a hiring partner who helps make your life easier. You need Indeed. Indeed is the job site that makes hiring as easy as 1, 2, 3, post, screen, interview, all on Indeed. Get your quality short list of candidates whose resumes on Indeed match your job description faster. Only pay for the candidates that meet the must-have qualifications. Schedule and complete interviews in your Indeed dashboard. Indeed makes connecting with and hiring the right talent fast and easy. You can choose from more than 130 skill sets and then add your must-have requirements so you only pay for the applications that meet them. According to Talent Nest, Indeed delivers 4 times more hires than the other sites combined. If you're hiring, you need Indeed. Get started right now with a free $75 sponsored job credit to upgrade your job post at Indeed.com/locked. Get a $75 credit at Indeed.com/locked. Indeed.com/locked. Offer valid through June 30th. Terms and conditions apply.
Locked On Lakers, also brought to you by the folks at Built Bar. It is the best tasting protein bar ever. 18 flavors, Andy. 6 new ones, including caramel brownie, cookies and cream, lemon almond cheesecake. That one is particularly delicious. And they're all covered in 100% chocolate. As you know, Andy, I have a bit of a sweet tooth. They're all soft. They're all easy to chew. That is, it sounds like something that should be obvious with something that tastes good with protein bars. No, it is not. I am a habitual snacker. I need things that are healthy that I can eat, that are low calorie, low sugar, high in protein, high in fiber. It's good stuff going into my body that also keeps me from eating 35 other things over the course of the day that I shouldn't be. Plus, I need the protein. I'm getting a little older. Yeah. I need the help. Built Bar has 15% off for you if you use the promo code LOCKED15. Again, 15% off your next order. Use the promo code LOCKED15 for 15% off at BuiltBar.com. Again, 15% off at BuiltBar.com when you use LOCKED15. Built Bar really is the best tasting protein bar ever. All right, Andy. So I mentioned it before, Montrezl Harrell did not play Saturday against the Mavericks. He only played 17 minutes on Thursday in the first game against Dallas. And in the second Utah game last week, only played 13 minutes. So Frank Vogel said after the game that this was a matter of, you know, wanting to keep all three centers sharp and giving everybody playing time. Marc Gasol hasn't played much. He did this last year, Vogel, relatively frequently. Like, you have these random 3-game stretches where all of a sudden Quinn Cook and Troy Daniels are playing a lot. So this isn't, the explanation isn't totally, you know, sort of maybe protecting of Montrez, but you know, Harrell has been low key, not good of over the course of the last month or so.
His April, if you look at his April splits, Brian, they are brutal. He is averaging 8 points per game. Little under 6 rebounds in 18 minutes per game. He's shooting 51% from the field, which
for him is terrible.
It's incredibly low. And he's also just looked lethargic out there. Like, he really has looked like a guy who has played in every game this season, which up until Saturday was the case. And in a season like this, that's so compact, the way Harrell plays, even though he's only like a 20-ish minute per night, that feels like something that can really add up.
Well, but it's a 20-minute ish a night guy for most of the year, except for, you know, the some of those, you know, he had a stretch of a couple of weeks where it was high 20s into the 30s and, like, you know, carrying a much more significant weight than he had been before. And I mean, I think you talked about it last week that Trez was looking tired, and I agree with you. And for a guy whose game is built on energy, I think what we saw is, you know, he was 7 of 8 Saturday, 7 of 8 in 17 minutes, on Thursday in 17 minutes, didn't play on Saturday, 7 of 8 in 17 minutes or whatever it was, and was a minus 19.
Yeah.
Like, to be that efficient from the floor with your own offense and be that, you know, on the wrong side of the plus minus, I think the thing that has suffered the most is his defensive energy, because he's not good on that side anyway. But the rebounding, the ability to kind of stand up against those larger bodies that he has to defend inside or whatever it might be, the ability to get to the lane and take the charges that he's been doing all year. And, like, if you lose 15% of that, And you're Harrell, and you play defense the way he has to as an undersized center, that 15% costs a ton. And I think that's the end where Vogel has seen the biggest problems. And of course, we know, Andy, like, that's the side of the ball that he is always going to default to. If you're not up to, you know, if you're not up to the standard, you're going to lose playing time. And I think that is a significant part of why his minutes have gone down.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting moving forward to see if this is something that Frank Vogel is really considering in terms of the rotation, because he does not have a lot of time to screw around. Like, he's got to land on something that he wants relatively soon, because once you get LeBron back, you know, that final piece of hopeful cohesion moving forward into the playoffs, you want to know exactly what it's going to be that LeBron rejoins. You know, like, I've seen a lot of people on Twitter hit us up at Cam Brothers asking why Frank Vogel hasn't played Marc Gasol and Montrezl Harrell together, which he had said that he was initially curious about when Marc Gasol got taken out of the rotation. And I don't think Vogel was being insincere. I just think it's difficult to do that right now when you've had so many guys in and out of the lineup or getting so close to the playoffs, in particular when you were missing LeBron and AD. You'd also mentioned before, Brian, like, the last season, Vogel would play guys like Quinn Cook or Troy Daniels the occasional minutes just to keep them sharp. And that's right. True.
It means somebody for a night is out of the rotation.
But I was going to say, actually, I don't think that often guys came out of the rotation. More often than not, if I remember this correctly, he would just find ways to put Daniels or Cook in the rotation, just give him some minutes. It didn't feel as significant as what happened with Harrell Saturday. So, you know, we'll see what it looks like moving forward. You know, I wouldn't blame Vogel if he's actually considering something different, just given Harrell's general ineffectiveness over those last games. What was also interesting, though, was hearing the reaction of Marc Gasol, you know, asked about re-entering the rotation, having been taken out of it. And I thought it was interesting the way he talked about this in a way that I thought acknowledged both his dissatisfaction with elements that have happened, you know, not complaining. I think he's being professional, good soldier, but he's certainly within his rights to be unhappy about not playing. But I thought expressing some empathy towards Harrell as well. He said, quote, "It's not an ideal situation for anybody. I'm sure that I'm just been in this situation and not play for a few games. Nobody likes that. But, you know, whatever the coach wants us to do, we're trying to execute and do the best possible, stay ready in the days where you don't have a game you're not planning to play, but it's not ideal. As a player, you always like to know the consistency of when you're going to play, how you're going to play. But we have a very deep team. And if a coach wants three guys or two guys for one spot, that's going to take a lot of buying in." And then he was asked later about how much communication he gets about when he's going to play, if it's timing, matchup, whatever. Mark just started laughing and said, "Don't ask me. I just work
it's
here.
Like I just work here." It's like, and you know, Vogel is very good with communication, and that doesn't mean he's not talking to guys. But I thought Kuzma's reaction to a lot of this was interesting too, because he was, you know, asked about the same thing, and he basically, his reaction was, "Yeah, it sucks. Suck it up." I had to do it. I had to reinvent myself. And granted, it worked out for Kuz. He got paid. He's fit into a very, I think, comfortable role with this team.
And he was never out of the rotation altogether.
Correct. And so it's not, but like his basic point was, we're trying to win a title here. And we don't have the time or the space for people to be complaining about stuff that ultimately is self-interested. And again, not apples to apples, easy for him to say. He's not going to be looking for a contract next year in the way that Montrezl Harrell almost certainly will be. But he's right. And it gets to why both of us, whether it's Andre Drummond and the potential for him to lose playing time in the playoffs or not play fourth quarters or whatever it might be, or somebody like Harrell, who we've talked about all year long as somebody who, when the playoffs get here, may not play, because that was the criticism when they signed the guy. But what about the playoffs? And we've been pointing it out all year. Okay, if he doesn't play in the playoffs, okay, he doesn't play in the playoffs. But you know, I did think Kuz's reaction made I was sort of on board with, like, this is probably a one game thing. I mean, Trez is going to play between now and the end of the year. It's not like he's going to sit every game. But the way Kuz answered that question kind of made me think that perhaps internally there may be more to the idea of Trez might be losing some minutes here, like, you know, for real life, IRL, as my kids say. That got my attention. So we'll see what happens on Monday, but that definitely got my attention.
Well, I mean, if we've learned nothing about Frank Vogel from the 2 years he's been coaching this team and last year in the bubble, he will take guys in and out of the rotation, particularly big men. Mm-hmm. You know, he did that with Dwight Howard. He did that with JaVale McGee. He had Markieff Morris in and out of the rotation. You know, he knows what he's looking for, and he very clearly feels confident in the buy-in from guys like LeBron and AD that they will back him. They'll back his play, because it becomes easier to do that with guys like Harrell, like Marc Gasol, you had mentioned before, potentially Andre Drummond. We'll see how this all looks moving forward. Those are guys who have a certain stature in the league, but they don't have LeBron's stature and they don't have AD's stature.
Right. All right. So up next, Jeannie Buss had a controversial moment on the All the Smoke podcast.
Yeah, it was with Steven Jackson, Matt Barnes.
Yes, we will talk about that and then deliver our own list based on the list that got Jeannie in trouble. We'll do that next. First, though, do want to tell you about Bet Online. Bet Online is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all of your sports action. Football, Andy, it's over. College basketball, it's over. But we got the NBA playoffs rolling up, the NHL in full swing. Bet Online, it covers awards, TV shows, reality TV, anything, like anything really that you want to put money on.
They can
take care of that for you.
Brian, huge on my Real Housewives parlay last week. Massive. I put all the cities together, made a bundle.
Well, yeah, and you know what I call my new boat? I call it BAFTA. Because BAFTA paid for my new boat. Real-time updated odds and props on almost anything you can imagine. BetOnline has you covered for all the news, scores, and odds. It's the best way to place your bets, and it's free to sign up. Head on over to the website. Use your mobile device. You can do that, too, to sign up today and receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit with the promo code LOCKEDON. Again, 50% off welcome bonus, your first deposit with the promo code LOCKEDON. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. All right. So Jeannie Buss goes on the All the Smoke podcast, Andy, with Matt Barnes and Steven Jackson. And she is asked, this is a great question. I mean, this is solid, solid questioning from these guys to Lakers governor Jeannie Buss. Who are the five most important Lakers? Not best, not greatest of all time, important. And, you know, Jeannie, panicked. I think it's fair to say, because that's an impossible question to ask.
It's really hard.
And she comes up with the following list: Kobe, Kareem, LeBron, has to be reminded. This is how bad she panicked. She has to be reminded of Magic Johnson. Magic Johnson. And then in sort of flailing around for a fifth person.
History.
Well, yeah.
Maybe she knew that eventually magic was going to be going in there, but she just wanted to make sure he sweated it a little bit because, maybe. Again,
but, I mean,
he bailed on her.
Important can mean a lot of things. It doesn't always mean you did
the
right
thing. I don't
care
how you're defining important. Magic makes the list. There's right. no way you
but
can.
But the moment that you're talking about where he just like quit, that was important too.
Yes, I was going to say there is no definition of important right. for the Lakers and Magic Johnson where he does not make that list. It is impossible to make that list without him.
So she flails around a little bit. Yeah, she flails around, but I would panic given this too. All right, but anyway, in the spirit of Jeannie Buss's list of the most important Lakers, Andy and I decided to take the opposite tack here and try to come up with a list of some of the least important Lakers that we could. And this, we are limiting it to just Lakers who have played in the time that we've been covering the team, which is that we mentioned was the first season of that 05-06, I think is what you
yes.
said. I always go back to you because I can't remember. All right. So no particular order, doesn't have to be, but please, Andy, present to me your first candidate for least important Laker of the last 15 to 16 seasons.
Jim Jackson, who was a late season addition to
yes.
the team that you and I covered that first year. Jim Jackson seemed like he was really a brilliant pickup because at the time, Kobe looked exhausted from mm-hmm. carrying that sorry ass team, and they just needed somebody to soak up some wing minutes during the playoffs. And Jim Jackson even had experience in the triangle going back to his years in Dallas. For some reason, dude never stepped on the court mm-hmm. and I believe retired afterwards. Like Jim Jackson right. had a pretty
it was ballyhooed. There was a lot of ballyhoo around that signing. It was like, yes,
but, yeah, I mean, it seemed like a really great pickup, made a lot of sense. Dude did not play at all. I remember just being like, I don't get that. Like, how bad could he be? I don't get it.
All right. So I have one. I will throw this name out for you. Troy Murphy.
No.
Why was Troy Murphy important?
Because he was part of, I want to say it was the 2012 season.
2011, 2012. He averaged just over 3 points a game, 11 points a game in his career.
But he
real
was
NBA player.
But he was 1/5. Yeah, Brian and I decided that for the most part, we're not looking for guys who were just G Leaguers.
Right. Nigel Hayes is not making the list.
But okay, this is why.
Why was Troy Murphy important?
Because he was a critical component to the hilariously memeable and jokeable occasional all-white lineup where you had Troy Murphy, Josh McRoberts, Jason Capono, Steve Blake, Luke Walton. You needed all five of them to make it happen, Brian. It was hilarious. That does not, I checked the roster, literally cannot happen without Troy Murphy. That got a lot of mileage on Lakers Twitter. He was too important.
By the way,
important to the joke.
Basketball remains the only place where five white people in one place is funny. Not necessarily funny otherwise. All right. Well, I will say, okay, how about this? I'll throw out this name. He started 59 games over three seasons, Andy. Three seasons, because I tried to look for a guy who was on the team for more than a year. None of which, you don't remember any of them. I'm talking about Ryan Kelly. For a guy who played multiple seasons with the team, Ryan Kelly might be the least important Laker of all time.
When you frame it precisely like that... That's a really good argument.
Like, he's more important than Nigel Hayes. Again, I'm going poor Nigel Hayes. I'm going back to him. But like, he was on the Ryan Kelly played for 3 years on this team before he moved somewhere else to Atlanta. I don't remember a single of those 59 games he started. 59 games he started as a Laker.
When you frame it specifically in terms of actual time with the team combined with lack of consequence, Ryan Kelly is a strong entry. That is really well done.
All right, give me another name.
My next was for the 2011 season. I went back and forth between Joe Smith and Theo Ratliff, veteran big men that both of us thought at the time.
Be careful where you end up here.
We thought could be helpful just in terms of adding center depth. As it turned out, Theo Ratliff averaged 0.2 points per game versus Joe Smith's 0.5 points per game. But together ultimately,
0.7 points a game.
Ultimately, I landed on Theo Ratliff as the least memorable, but just because with at least with Joe Smith, you had the hashtag yes sir.
That's exactly everything, right.
Everything he did on Twitter, yes sir, was a lot of fun.
Yes.
So Theo Ratliff is my next guy.
That is an excellent, because if you had gone the other way, I would have been disappointed, because
no.
Yes sir is still, you can still do that among Lakers media and yep. people will know what you're talking about. Yep.
Should also be noted that way. Both of them very delightfully nice.
Oh, wonderful people. All right, I got two more that I want to go through. The first one, 23 starts in 2004-2005. So I was stretching a little bit back before we technically were covering the team, but we were around it doing stringer work for ESPN at the time. Jumaine Jones.
Oh, yeah.
76 games with the Lakers, 23 starts, averaged a respectable 7.6 points a game. No, not important.
No, didn't move a lot of jerseys.
No, didn't.
My next entry, Christian Ianga, played one game with the Lakers, and his only real contribution to the franchise was being part of the Dwight Howard deal, which was a disaster.
Right. I thought about him and people like him. Like, people would be like, what about like Aaron McKee? Like, he never, like, no, Aaron McKee was a critical part of creating the title DNA because he was involved in the Gasol trade and all
and
that.
He did some good mentoring, to be fair to McKee.
So, like, I disqualified Ianga because he became part of a significant and important Lakers trade.
I just felt like it was going to happen with or without him. And the only thing that we...
But we'll never know. Andy, we'll never know. We'll never know.
Fair enough. I guess he should be off the list.
All right. So we've each managed to shoot down the logic. Rather, this was the guy that I came up because I also had Derek Williams on my list. But my title winner for the least important Laker of all time, because I really did want to keep it to like real basketball players who had like significant impacts around the league, played for the Lakers, and honestly, you could completely forget they were here. And my ultimate candidate for that was Brandon Bass.
Oh, I feel bad because he was really, really
nice. Was an excellent player. Brandon Bass had a great career. Until I just said that, did you totally remember that Brandon Bass played for the Lakers?
Off the top of my head, no.
Right.
But if you
and it wasn't that long ago. It was 2015, right. 2016.
If you had mentioned Brandon Bass, I would remember that he had been on the Lakers. That being said, until I started doing some research, I had forgotten that he was on the Lakers.
Yes.
Like you said, real good, solid career. Really professional guy, great in that locker room. Very
did that
respected.
Really good PSA where he, as an adult, went and learned how to swim.
Yeah,
with all the little kids and stuff, which is super important. Like, you know, you need to know how to swim, and like if you're an adult who doesn't know that, like don't be embarrassed. Go learn how to swim. Brandon Bass did that; it was great. But in 66 games, the Lakers, he averaged 12.7 points a game, which isn't bad at all. Like that's not bad per 36, I should say. I completely forgot he was on the team.
Yeah.
100%. Brandon Bass wins my award for the least important Laker of the last 15 years.
Okay. I got two more guys I want to throw out quickly. One, Kent Bazemore should have been a more important Laker. Remember, he came over as part of the deal that sent Steve Blake to the Warriors. Marshawn Brooks, believe it or not, was the bigger name at the time. Kent Bazemore ended up playing well. But the front office trying to keep open that like 0.7% chance in free agency that they could get LeBron or Melo ended up not being
letting
willing
him go.
To put they wouldn't put out a qualifying offer that was like $2 million.
Something it was even
really
that high. It was $438, I believe is what his qualifying
ludicrously
offer was.
Small, and they weren't willing to do it, and they let Kent Bazemore go. Kent Bazemore, who was precisely the type of player that they should have been looking for at the time, should have been a more important Laker, but because of the front office's ridiculous priorities and their star bleeping tendencies, Kent Bazemore's career with the Lakers meant nothing. And then my final guy, he's the one exception to the rule we had about the, you know, needed to be a legit NBA player, Elias Harris. And I mention him because initially I thought I was
sounds like a made up person.
Well, he is the only player, because I went through every roster, Brian. He's the only player in the 15 years that we have covered the Lakers in some capacity that I have no recollection at all who he is. Like, even the bit players, I have a fuzzy memory.
Yeah, I remember, again, I remember Nigel Hayes and Vander Blue, and, you know.
I have no idea who Elias Harris is at all. I even remember Scott Machado.
Oh, sure.
I do not remember who Elias Harris is in the slightest. So I had to include him.
All right. Lakers are in Orlando on Monday. The AD rehab tour continues. Trying to hold on to some seeding in the Western Conference. We'll talk a lot about that over the course of the week. Talk about Ben McLemore over the course of the week. A lot to talk about over the course of the week. Very excited again to be part of the network. Please reach out to us, whether it's on the Locked On Lakers Twitter handle. You can reach us at Cam Brothers. We really want to hear from you and make this show interactive. We will be doing mailbags. We've got a lot of cool stuff coming up with video, live interaction. We'll be doing Clubhouse on Fridays. So we're really looking forward to building this stuff out with you and this audience, and are excited and appreciate you guys coming along with us. And we will see everyone tomorrow.